Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Rob Alexander to the broadcast. Rob has been the Chief Information Officer of Capital One since 2007. As CIO, he's responsible for enterprise-wide IT strategy, IT infrastructure, architecture, central data management, information risk, and business continuity. Before becoming CIO, Rob served as Capital One's Executive Vice President for Internet and Enterprise Customer Management, where he served as the lead executive for the largest IT system replacement program in the company's history. Prior to joining Capital One in 1998, Rob worked at Bain & Company. Rob has a bachelor's degree in physics from Harvard University and an MBA from Harvard Business School. I recently caught up with Rob in person in his office in Richmond, Virginia, and our conversation covered world-class IT principle one, people, as we discussed how Capital One facilitates collaboration in its forward-thinking office environment. Principle two, infrastructure, as we discussed how the company integrates its systems after acquisitions. Principle three, project and portfolio management, as we discussed the IT organization's adoption of agile development. Principle five, external partnerships, as we discussed how Capital One taps into various innovation ecosystems, as well as a variety of other topics. This is one of a series of interviews with financial services CIOs conducted in collaboration with CIO Straight Talk magazine. Read additional articles by other technology executives at www.straighttalkonline.com. Rob Alexander, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be here.
It's great to speak with you. I thought we would begin with your role as Chief Information Officer here at Capital One. You have an unusually long tenure in role and an even longer tenure in company. Next year, you will celebrate your 10th anniversary as Chief Information Officer. And a luxury for me in speaking with somebody of that tenure is just thinking about how much changes in a decade. I would imagine you'd agree as the pace of technology change has never been faster, and the need to be very progressive in one's thinking, therefore, is becoming more demanding. And especially leading a team at the same company for a decade, I can imagine that that's a challenge. Would love to have you reflect a little bit about your tenure, your 9+ years now in role, and the ways in which you think about that kind of constant refresh, that constant progressivism of the IT department.
Great question, and I will say it's been an amazing journey, both over the full 18 years that I've been with Capital One, you know, many of those years working in our lines of business, and then taking on the CIO role in mid-2007, and, you know, how much our company has changed, how much our technology organization has changed, and, you know, how much the world of technology outside has changed. So it's been quite a ride, and I never feel like one year to the next that I'm getting stale or that my job is the same, because it's not. It's really quite dynamic. When I took on the CIO role in 2007, we were on the cusp of a real change in what's going on in the world of banking, our strategy as a company, and what we needed to do in our technology organization. And, you know, I think in those kind of early years of my tenure, we were working a lot around acquisitions and integrating banks that we had purchased, rationalizing infrastructure across these acquired entities, and pulling off some really big projects. And I think we really developed a competency as an organization around great delivery of really very big complex projects, like acquisition integrations. We were buying numerous banks and really trying to integrate those, including the acquisition of ING Direct, which we did in 2011, which was a major acquisition and really kind of positioned us as the leading digital bank. However, around 2010 or so, we were kind of really coming to the conclusion that the model that we had was not going to be the right model for where banking was going and what we needed to do as a company to win with where banking was going. And it was this recognition that digital banking, internet, and early days of mobile, but digital banking in particular, was really going to be important for the future. And it required a different kind of technology organization, a different kind of delivery pattern, way of doing business in order to succeed. You know, kind of the early recognition was our approach that we had developed for how we deliver projects, this kind of waterfall. You know, everything took 18 months, but we did it kind of really deliberately and with quality and a lot of precision. That model wasn't going to work in a world where we needed to iterate very quickly. And so two things kind of came out of that recognition. One is that we need a more agile way of working. And the other is that we need to have more on-site, part of our associate base, engineering talent to deliver that work. And a model of an organization that relied on a lot of outsourced functions, whether it was software development or running our technology operations, wasn't going to be the right model for the future. And so we started really on two fronts. One is, hey, let's really go out and aggressively build the kind of talented organization with really in-house software engineering capabilities that we're going to need for the future. And let's move to a more agile way of delivery. And so we adopted Agile Scrum. We first, you know, I think it was the end of 2011, we were really piloting Agile Scrum in our organization. And at the same time, we were trying to hire the teams that we needed to actually be in those Agile Scrums. And it was really working well for us, especially, you know, where we piloted was most focused on our digital capabilities. We quickly came to the conclusion that, hey, this agile way of working could really be powerful much more broadly than just in our narrowly focused digital capabilities. We could extend that across our technology organization. We weren't sure at the time, kind of early on, how far it would extend. How far could you really extend agile into all the things we do in technology? But we said, hey, let's really try to drive that shift and see how far we can take it. And so over the course of 2012, 2013, we really rolled out Agile across our organization. And at the same time, we continued this very aggressive hiring journey. And so what we found was that Agile is broadly applicable as a way of working across technology. And it isn't just in kind of some narrowly confined spaces, that Agile is really kind of a, in many respects, almost a universal way of working with kind of this constant iteration, checking what your progress against what the market demands or what your customers demand, and kind of continually iterating on the product until you get to something that is really powerful and winning in the market. You know, we continued on that journey and continued to hire. And that was really the beginnings of this broader technology transformation that we really drove over the subsequent years. And there were several elements to that technology transformation. But the two big themes were, one is we as an organization need to be great at delivering software. We need to be great at delivering data solutions that support how we make decisions with customers, how we interact with them, and how we make decisions internally. And building those competencies was something we really needed to do. We have always had a deep heritage around data and analytics, but we needed to evolve it with where technology was going. But we weren't always great at building software, and that was the thing that we really needed to build as a capability. And so we said, look, if we really need to hire that kind of software engineering talent, what's it going to take to do that? And the challenge is the great software engineering talent, which is so much in demand, they want to work where they see other great software engineers. You have a little bit of the chicken and the egg problem. How do you build an initial critical mass that can draw and attract other talent? And then you also have to offer a way of working that is appealing to those software engineers. They want to come in and they want to be productive and they want to work in modern technologies. They don't want to necessarily work on legacy applications and platforms or slow bureaucratic ways of working, which are often the case that you might find in large banking or other large institutions. And so we really took on those two challenges, which is how do we build a team, a critical mass of great software engineering talent that will attract others, and change our technology operating model in a way which allows us to move like the best technology companies. And again, all of this is grounded in our strategy, which is the recognition that the winners in banking are going to be companies that ultimately look like great technology companies, because that is where the industry of banking is going. And so there have been a number of elements to our transformation. In addition to kind of rapidly growing our software engineering staff, we've recognized that in order to be productive, we need to think about how we deliver infrastructure. So we've made a choice to move to the public cloud. We build all of our software today on the public cloud. Amazon Web Services is our predominant cloud partner there. We've got a great relationship with Amazon Web Services, and they've really been a good partner for us in terms of kind of building out our capabilities there. So all of our new software we build in the public cloud, and we are kind of migrating applications out of our data centers to the public cloud as well. Our view is that we don't want to be in the business of building infrastructure. There are companies out there that are doing a really great job in that and have invested an awful lot in that and have tremendous scale in that. We would rather be focused on building great applications for our customers that really build on the things that we know about our customers and our business strategy and what we're trying to accomplish and what their needs are. And you know, we think that's where we can really invest and make a difference. And so we would rather put our energies there than in trying to build, you know, our own data centers or our own private cloud or other things. And so that's been a really kind of critical component of our transformation. And it has allowed our organization to move very quickly and nimbly, like other technology companies do, as opposed to other big banks, which are often mired in their own internal infrastructure challenges. You know, how we build software has changed a lot. So I mentioned our agile transformation. That's been a big component of it. We're very focused on leveraging what's going on in the world of open source. And so for us, we have kind of an open source first philosophy in how we build our software. We try to build on an open source foundation. We're very active in the open source community. Our associates give back to open source. We launch our own open source projects as well as consuming open source. And so we think it's kind of a two-way street there, and it's important for us to be involved both in consuming but also making sure we're contributing to those efforts.
Giving and getting.
Yes, exactly. But it also really infects your culture, right? And so open source becomes a way that which we work internally as well, where some teams may build software that other teams consume and they're contributing back, and we're creating, really it's a more collaborative way of how we build software internally. And we found that that has really built a community of software engineers and advances the state of the art of our own internal technology. So open source is a big element of how we do business. It's also really an important part of how we're thinking about the world of data and analytics. So open source, frankly, has transformed the world of data and analytics, starting with Hadoop. But there's been a whole ecosystem of projects that have emerged that have changed the way companies can do data and analytics. Not all do, but the potential there is to do much more than what's been done historically. And so we are really kind of riding that wave of technology innovation, which is both about how do we handle vastly larger quantities of data and do it in ways that we couldn't do historically, whether it's more data history, more data variables, but we can handle much larger quantities of data today with the technology that's available. But we're also able to move to data in real time. And I think this is really an important element of how the world of banking is and will change, which is more and more banking services are getting integrated into people's lives, right? It's in your mobile phone. You can talk to it on Alexa. So banking is more showing up at the moment when customers need banking services, as opposed to I'm going to stop what I'm doing and go over to my branch and execute my transaction. And that also means more and more real time. And so the ability to handle data in real time, the ability to make decisions on that data in real time, which means complex processing from executing models in real time all the way up to machine learning kinds of capabilities in real time, those are, I think, capabilities and competencies that are going to be really essential for where banking is going. And so these are things that we're really focused on and investing in as an organization.
Related to this is DevOps. I know that the organization has made a commitment to DevOps. You've been ramping up more and more teams, leveraging the various methods associated with that. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that journey, the rationale for doing so, the fruit of that labor, so to speak. I'm also curious how you measure the effectiveness of it. How do you know that it's working well or not?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we're obsessed with how can we move faster, more nimbly, deliver more value for our business customers and for our end customers. And our agile transformation and our hiring of great engineering talent has all been part of that. Our move to the cloud is really driven by how can we be more agile, nimble, and efficient. And the move to DevOps, which kind of came on the heels of our agile transformation, for us has been kind of a next phase past agile. It is about how do we become a much more productive, high-performing organization. And we think that the move to DevOps, it's about automation of how we build software, all the way from being able to develop software and push it all the way to deployment in an automated way with all the testing and security screens and other things you need to do all along the way. And so that whole automated delivery pipeline is kind of an important part of it. But it's also about a culture of developers owning their code in production. And that's really an important shift. And that's where the whole term DevOps comes from, is bringing development and operations together. But there are powerful benefits that come from teams owning their code and production. Number one is they're able to kind of quickly resolve issues that come up because we're no longer in the mode of just handing off code to an operations team. We're moving all of those operation teams upstream and integrating them into the development teams. But it also changed the mindset of developers about the importance of quality of code and delivery and what it means to actually develop code for running at scale, really high reliability, high resiliency environment in a very demanding set of use cases, which are financial services for consumers, right? And then the appreciation for how important quality is in that and making sure that the code is defect-free and when things happen that we're really able to resolve them quickly. There are productivity benefits and there are quality benefits and there are just employee satisfaction benefits from working in an environment that is really operating with a high degree of efficiency and that we're really turning out great capabilities and software products for our customers. And so that's really what the DevOps transformation has been for us. We're very much in that journey. I think it's important that as a leadership team in technology that we're communicating to our whole organization, this is what excellence in software delivery looks like, right? And that every part of our organization, every team is working towards getting to that goal. And, you know, starting with where they are today, what are the things they need to automate? What are the tools they need to implement? What are the things they need to change about how they operate so that they have a roadmap to get to that at a point where they're really operating at a high degree of performance and productivity. And that's the journey that we're on right now. We've defined what we think the elements are of where we need to go, and now every team is working on that roadmap. Some are far along and are pretty close to that destination. Others are earlier in that journey and are working towards their roadmap of how they get there. But we think this is really a powerful way of working. We think it's really good for our business customers who will get a lot out of it and are very engaged in how we work on this, but we think it's an important part of really becoming a high-performing organization. And back again to really modeling ourselves off of how are the best technology companies operating, because that's how we need to be performing if we're going to win and where banking's going.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking today at your campus in Richmond, and I've had a chance to take a little bit of a tour and see some of the changes that you're making to the office space to enhance collaboration. And I know that IT is not alone in facilitating that, but a lot of it is around collaboration technology and ensuring that the people here in Richmond can collaborate with their teams in an agile fashion, but presumably, as you mentioned before, with colleagues in places like New York and Chicago and San Francisco and Dallas and so on. Can you talk a bit about IT's role in that transformation, but also, I think more importantly, the insights that the changes are based upon? What have you come to realize are some of the key insights in terms of how people work best together?
Right. And this goes back to really the launch of our Agile journey, which started in technology, but was very much even early on in partnership with our business. I think Agile just speaks to some elements of human nature, how people like to work. People like to collaborate. They like to move quickly, make decisions quickly, and they like to produce stuff and get stuff done and to see progress and see the kind of the fruits of their labor and to see them actually out there with customers and getting feedback on them. And so there's something powerful about Agile that just speaks to just human nature in general, I think. And, you know, we picked that up very quickly. The teams that were engaged in our Agile pilots early on were just very energized by this way of working. They really liked being together with their team instead of setting up a meeting or sending emails in order to get decisions made. You know, they were sitting around a table and asking each other, what's the best way to solve this particular problem or what's this requirement and how do I implement it? And so it really did point our way to a new way of working at Capital One. Not that we hadn't had collaborative teams or even piloted Agile earlier, but we hadn't done it as broadly as what we're talking about now. And so we then kind of started to scale it up, and we recognized that this way of working required a few things. One is we wanted more co-location of our associates. So having a highly outsourced development organization is not consistent with the way that we wanted to operate. We felt like we really needed to have co-location and collaboration is really critical. By the way, you can work in Agile across locations. I think it is at its peak kind of optimization when you have physical co-location. You can't always have that, and so we appreciate that we need multiple ways of working. But wherever possible, we try to achieve co-location. And that's not just for the technology team, but that is also for the business team that's involved. And so in every one of our Agile Scrum teams, we have a product owner who is a member of one of our lines of business product owner team and product management team, and they are part of that Agile Scrum. And that's a critical relationship because that product owner holds the vision for what it is we're trying to build, where we're trying to go with this in the market, and therefore what the backlog of capabilities are and features are that we're trying to build in order to get that product to market. And that engaged product owner role is really critical. It's an essential element to the success of that Agile Scrum team, which is, you know, in numbers, mostly technology, but a critical, critical role that's played by the business. And so as we've tried to build out now our kind of physical campus, we've tried to create workspaces that really enable that collaboration at the Agile Scrum team level, but also we operate what's called the Scaled Agile Framework. It's a framework for how to operate Agile on a multiple team, more integrated way for larger builds and larger products. And so that implies that we need to be able to be effective in collaborating at the both the individual team level, but also across multiple teams. And we've built this workspace with those things in mind. And so we have technology teams co-located with the business teams so that we can achieve that kind of tight collaboration that we need. And it's really worked well. It's generally open, but we create spaces where those teams can get together and do their Agile ceremonies and things like that and do that really effectively. And then, like you mentioned, we also have the ability to work across locations as well. So we've enabled a lot of technology solutions across our site so that we can have efficient and effective collaboration as well across our locations.
I think that part of the theme that runs through the entire conversation so far is this whole notion of the digital transformation that the organization is undertaking, really becoming a leader in digital banking, digital finance, et cetera, in its various forms as it translates into this environment. I wonder how, again, across your period of running IT especially, the concept of digital as an IT-specific area versus a way of doing business, how did that dawn upon this leadership team? How readily did it become pervasive across this organization?
That's a great question. And you know, I'd say in the early days for us and for every bank, you had an internet online banking application, and that was pretty much the purview of the technology team to build that and develop that. But I would say early in my tenure in the CIO role, it became apparent that building great digital capabilities. Early on, it was about online, but it very soon became about mobile, and now it's more pervasive than mobile. It's things like wearables, it's things like Alexa and those kinds of agents, and so it is broad and pervasive now. But I would say early in my tenure, it became clear that this was really going to be important to our business strategy. And I think our organization is very dynamic around really working backwards from where the world is going and where the market's going. And it starts with our CEO, Rich Fairbank, who is also our founder. We're a founder-led company and just has great passion for understanding how the world is evolving, and technology is a central element of that. He's personally very engaged in our technology journey, but really working backwards from how the market's going and what it's going to take to win. And it's just kind of, you know, what's the hard, cold reality of the marketplace around us and how we need to position ourselves as an organization in that market. And I think too few organizations really confront that, right? It's so easy to build last year's strategy as, you know, this year's strategy is last year's strategy plus 10% kind of thing, as opposed to saying, no, I need to know how the world's changing, where the market's going, and I need to work backwards from that and say, what do I have to do as an organization to do that? And it's not hard to see that technology is playing such a critical role in this business. First of all, our products are just ephemeral products, right? It's principally software and data. Yes, we have branches, and yes, we have pieces of plastic that you put in your wallet today. Some people just carry them in their phone as digital versions of that. But our products are really kind of intangible products. And so at the core of our business is really the important role that technology plays. And it's about software, it's about data, it's about analytics and how you bring all that together to create a great experience for customers. And so the kind of this recognition that that's where the world is going and that strategic realization is really what's been driving what we've been doing for many years now. And I would say it starts with our CEO, but our whole kind of executive team, very aligned around this view that we need to be technology leaders and digital leaders in our industry in order to win with where we're going. And if you think about Capital One, our mix of business, and, you know, a leading credit card issuer. We're kind of numerous segments of consumer banking. We're also in commercial banking. And we're the leading digital bank by virtue of the digital bank that we had built prior to ING Direct, but also the acquisition of ING Direct, which really gave us scale as a leading digital bank. You know, we have a mix of products and a mix of customers that is more slanted digital, frankly, than other large financial institutions. We're one of a short list of institutions that really have a national footprint so that we can build a national brand, you know, on the back of credit card, on the back of our digital bank, as well as our other businesses. And so, you know, I think we are really have a great positioning strategically on kind of multiple dimensions, whether it's our brand, which is kind of a maverick brand in the marketplace, our mix of products and customers, and our focus and emphasis on technology and digital transformation, I think, which really position us well to be a digital leader in this business and to be a disruptor in this business.
That's great. There is a lot of disruption and a lot of venture capital that's going into finance, so-called fintech. In hearing you talk about the transformation that you've led, the modernization that you've led in terms of infrastructure, in terms of process, mentioning of Agile, mentioning of DevOps, the organizational changes, the ways of working, tracking along some of the kind of advantages the digital native organizations have by virtue of beginning with a tabula rasa. You know, oftentimes there's a lot that's been written and pontificated about the disadvantages of large organizations versus the startup for that reason. But it strikes me that you have the advantage of scale. You have the advantage of the history in this business and therefore the amount of knowledge that you have. How do you, as you partner with, I know, a lot of fintech companies in addition to competing with them in many ways as a digital bank, how do you think about, on the one hand, emulating some of what is magical about a startup sort of environment while also leveraging the advantages of a business with this history as well as scale that you have?
Great question. So let me start off by saying that, you know, fintech's an interesting term in and of itself.
Yeah, right.
It's often used as application to a segment of the startup world where there are startups that are based in technology but are focused on financial services type applications. I think it has a broader kind of meaning as well, though, which is kind of this recognition that the world of financial services and technology are really blending in a very powerful way. And it shows up as a competitive landscape for us that is not just these small startups that we're concerned about. You know, we need to be very attentive to what are the large internet web scale kind of internet superpowers doing. A lot of players that are very involved in aspects of owning customer relationships at very large scale, but also aspects of how their financial lives work. And then you just have the other traditional legacy banks that are investing a lot in building great digital capabilities. And so everybody's thinking about this and coming at it from different directions. And so I think fintech can broadly mean how all these things are coming together and changing the competitive landscape for banking. We stay very engaged with the world of startups, right? And we do that through, we have a team that's totally focused, is based in San Francisco, totally focused on understanding what's going on in the world of startups. We actually built a software application that we use internally to track our engagement with startup companies as well as venture capital firms. So we have a number of relationships with various venture capital firms, both on the East Coast and West Coast, which are engaged in fintech, but also in other enterprise kind of applications that are relevant for us. And so we stay very engaged. And a lot of times we're bringing in startups for pilots. And there are many, many examples of things where those pilots have turned into things that we now use or have deployed or in production. And also there are times when we've gone out and made acquisitions. So we've acquired actually into our technology organization some companies for their talent or for elements of their technology. We've also, by the way, extended that acquisition approach to things like design. So we think a design competency is absolutely essential to how we build our products. And so we acquired a company called Adaptive Path, which was a leading design firm based on the West Coast. And we brought them in. They were design consultancy. We brought them in and just kind of turned them inward to Capital One, and they're a design consultancy inward now. And they've become part of a team that we've also built organically. So we have, you know, continued to invest in design as a competency here. But that engagement is really important for us. And we learn a lot from these startup companies in terms of how they operate and how they think about building technology. And we go to school on that. And, you know, it's also a little bit how we measure, can we be as productive and as nimble as what we see some of these startups do? Now, you're right. They absolutely benefit from you know, starting with a clean slate, starting with only building modern technologies. We're only a 22-year-old company, so we don't come from a long heritage of banking, but we've acquired banks that have legacy infrastructure. And so, you know, we ourselves are working through modernization of legacy platforms and how we work through that. But there are a lot of things that we build. We start with almost a clean slate in terms of building, you know, building entirely on modern technologies in the cloud and then interfacing back to legacy platforms in ways that, you know, we can do pretty efficiently. We think there's real power in being able to operate at the kind of scale that we can operate. But we're going to go to school on what we can learn from Findex. Every now and then we'll make an acquisition. But, you know, we stay very kind of close to those developments and what they mean competitively, but also, you know, what we can benefit from.
Rob, I wonder if you could take a moment to talk about, looking forward, some of the innovative things your team and the company, more generally speaking, are working on for your customers.
We're really excited about the products that we're working on and developing for our customers. Let me mention a couple. There are a couple of really flagship products for us that we're really excited about. One is our wallet app, which is really designed to be kind of a companion app for cards that our customers spend on. And it, you know, provides a ton of capabilities around being able to track and manage your spending, to be able to track rewards and redeem rewards, a lot of notifications and kind of interesting insights for customers who are using our products. And in the case of Android, we actually build Android Pay into the wallet. And so customers can use that to pay. And some of the kind of notification capabilities, I'll give you an example. We've rolled out and launched some capabilities that we call Second Look, where in real time, we're kind of keeping an eye on unusual patterns that might happen in your transaction. Some are kind of obvious indicators of fraud, and we have models that look for fraud, and we'll alert you if we think we see fraud. But we'll also look for things that might be, for example, let's say you went to a restaurant and left an unusually large tip, which might be an indication that, hey, maybe some funny business was going on with your bill or whatever. We'll notify you that, hey, you just left an unusually large tip. Did you intend to do that? Or we might see you went to a gas station and you got a double swipe on your card. And we just want to let you know there's a double swipe on your card. Was that intentional? And so we think being able to, in real time, kind of give customers this kind of additional information to really look out for them in their spending patterns is pretty exciting kind of way to think about the relationship that we have with our customers. But it's the ability to kind of do that in real time, I think, that is kind of the essential element of that. It's a lot harder, you know, 48 hours later to get, you know, some email in your email box and realize, oh, wow, I didn't really intend to leave that tip. It's nice when we can kind of communicate that in real time. We're also really proud of our flagship mobile banking app, which for all your Capital One products, you know, we now have a mobile banking app that integrates all of those into one kind of really, I think, well-designed application, modern application. And these are all applications that we've built entirely in-house, native applications for all the major mobile platforms. We're really excited about our launch of a skill on Alexa, which allows you to service your Capital One products through a voice interface. We're the only bank to do this. You can service your credit card account, mortgage, auto loan. We've recently rolled out a feature, and by the way, these are products that we kind of continue to regularly iterate on. So whether it's our wallet or our mobile banking app or our Alexa skill, these are products that are kind of continuously under development and where we're rolling out new capabilities. So for Alexa recently, we rolled out the ability to kind of natural language queries about, you know, how much did I spend last month at Starbucks, for example. And these are things where if you really wanted to kind of figure that out yourself, you know, you might have to go back and pull out your bill and then add up all your Starbucks things and kind of tally it. But we can very quickly, through this kind of natural language interface, give you answers to questions which might actually be kind of tricky to calculate. We're also really excited about our CreditWise application, which helps consumers track and monitor their credit. And so we're rolling out some new features in that coming up. It really helps customers kind of get more insight into their credit score and, you know, what things drive it and how things they may change about their behavior might impact their credit score. And we think that's great financial literacy for all of our customers to have. So those are some of the things we're working on right at the moment that we're quite excited about.
I wanted to just briefly talk about your very non-traditional path to the CIO role. You were in the Air Force for a time. You were a management consultant at Bain & Company. You have an MBA from Harvard Business School. you don't have a traditional technology background, so to say. As you mentioned, you've been with the company for 18 years, so roughly half of your time here has been outside of IT as well. I wonder the advantages you see of having had the sort of varied experiences that you've had professionally in order to have a flexibility of mind, perhaps as one of those advantages, having a consultative approach, having literally been a management consultant, having the business acumen associated with having roles within, I should say, outside of IT, but also an MBA. Can you talk a bit about that journey and have the advantages in bringing that all to bear as an IT leader?
Yes, and I think there is a pretty disparate background, but I think all the things have contributed to my ability to do my job today. So, you know, in the Air Force, we were building missile systems, and I worked in an organization that was developing missile systems, and I did a lot around command and control and developing software requirements and developing those systems. And it was, you know, good insight to how to manage big projects at scale and, you know, very much kind of connected to the world of technology there. Business school was just a great learning experience and just really broadened my mind about how to think like a business person, right? And it's truly a general manager education at Harvard Business School. And you get it through the case method, which is all about real world experiences and kind of working through those and talking them out with your colleagues. And that's a powerful way to learn about business. That really kind of, I think, helped me develop skills as thinking like a general manager is probably the best way to describe it. And speak the language of business, right? As, you know, in college and in the Air Force, I didn't really get much exposure to that. Mm-hmm. And then my time at Bain, I felt like was almost a continuation of my Harvard Business School education. It was a great experience. I worked in lots of different industries, probably more financial services than anything else. But you're just engaged in tackling some of the most difficult problems that companies are dealing with. And you're typically engaged with pretty senior players in those organizations as a strategy consultant. And so that was just another kind of set of learning experiences for what are the biggest challenges that big companies face? How do they deal with them? You know, how to think like a strategist, being engaged with some really kind of impressive companies and impressive leaders in those organizations. And Bain's a great organization as well in terms of the culture and the caliber of people. And I learned a lot about the importance of great talent and how to collaborate and those kinds of things. And then I joined Capital One, and I've spent 18 years here and done a number of different things over my time at Capital One. But, you know, the reason I've stayed here is because of the power of the mission that we're on, and the culture and the people at this organization, and the fact that it's continued to be a successful and growing organization. All those things have contributed to it. But a very disparate set of things I've done. I spent a lot of time early on in our card business and some of our other businesses leading marketing and credit side of things there. And there came a point in our card business where we recognized we really needed, if we were going to continue to grow and be successful, we really needed a much more modern infrastructure than we were operating on. We had kind of a homegrown kind of thing, which, you know, we were growing so fast, we kind of Band-Aid and bubblegum kind of held it together. And we said, we really need a more modern, flexible infrastructure that will support the pace of innovation and growth that we're moving on. And so I volunteered to lead that. I was kind of quasi-volunteered, asked to, but also wanted to lead this project to really overhaul completely our infrastructure in our card business, which was, you know, at the time, very much our dominant business for Capital One. And it was a big program and a risky program for us, but we felt like having somebody who came out of the business side of it, as opposed to only our technology organization, leading that with a more integrated team, folks from all different aspects of operations, marketing, and technology, all working together to deliver this thing, that that would be a path to success. And it was a different way of working for us as a company, but it was of such scale and importance, we thought that would be a way to deliver it. And that was a several-year effort that kind of changed out virtually every aspect of our card infrastructure. That went well, and that kind of got me engaged in the world of technology more directly, more hands-on. I'd always had that affinity, but this was really kind of leading a big technology initiative for us. And then coming out of that, I did some work around building some new kind of enterprise-wide technology capabilities. And then our previous CIO, Gregor Baylar, left in 2007, and that's when I was asked to become our CIO. And at that point, I knew enough to be dangerous. You know, I had been involved in a lot of kind of technology initiatives at Capital One, including leading this big project, and really had you know, obviously a deep appreciation for our business. And so I think I had a good skill set to step in. But looking back on it, I also kind of didn't fully appreciate just how much I had to learn, right? And that learning continues to today, because the world of technology today looks nothing like what it did in 2007. Yeah. And I think I've really developed a deep appreciation for how much there is to learn and the leverage and power in harnessing technology for this business. It's just, this business is just so rich with opportunities to, you know, reinvent, disrupt, make better, improve lives of customers through how we implement technology, and it plays such a central role in it.
Well, Rob Alexander, thank you so much for joining us in the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.